Good morning to everyone and to those who are watching us on the internet. We welcome you and you're glad that you are joining us this morning. Elliot is under the weather today, and once Elliot discovered that it was questionable as to whether or not he would be able to speak today, he thought, of course, about Matt, Matt, unfortunately, was under the weather also, and so that puts me next. So, I have a problem, and every time I speak, which is not very often, but I tend to have more to say than the allotted time in which I give myself to speak, and so I'm going to try real hard not to run way over this morning. Jim, if you'll just raise your hand when it's 25 minutes from now, then I'll know I'm halfway through. Jim has done a lot of preaching. He knows what it's like to not to be able to get everything in that you want to say. That's right. Many of you know, I think, that Linda and I celebrated our 60th wedding anniversary this year. And we celebrated that by going to Alaska on a trip with my son and his family. We wanted to do that on our 50th, but it didn't work out. And there's a lot of planning and preparation that needs to be done whenever you take a trip like that. We spent 3 days in the Denali Park and then 7 days on a cruise back to Seattle. We needed to choose what excursions we wanted to take in advance because they're booked up if you don't do that. And so we decided to take a nature walk, hoping to see bears, for one thing. And fortunately, we did. It's a little hard to see this picture. It's kind of dark because it was back underneath some limbs of a tree beside a stream. But there is a mama bear and actually 3 cubs. We saw the mama bear catch that fish in the stream, and then she brought it up on the side on this flat rock, and they're sharing it. In preparation, of course, of all of this, the information that they give you to help you get prepared tells you, okay, now you need to wear clothes that in layers because it may be raining, there may be sunshine, so you need to take something to put on your skin so you don't sunburn. You want to be sure to bring your camera and your binoculars as well. And so you can see Linda here with everything that she had brought, great preparation. She brought her sunglasses. She got on the sunscreen. She has her camera, her binoculars in her fanny pack on the front. She's got her phone, which has a camera. What's not shown here is a backpack that I carried, and in that she put some sandwiches, she put some water, and some rain gear in case it did start raining. Also, what you don't see is her feet, her shoes. Before we left, she decided since we were going to take some hiking trips, she'd need some appropriate footwear. So she went out and she bought some hiking boots. And I thought that's a good idea, you know, because you never know what kind of rocks and other type of difficulty you're going to have tracing through the woods. But when we left the ship that morning, I looked down at her feet, and she didn't have on the hiking boots. She had on tennis shoes. And I said, honey, you bought those boots. Why are you wearing tennis shoes? And she said, well, I read that we may see a bear, and they may not be friendly. And I said, do you really think those tennis shoes are going to help you outrun that bear? And she said, no, I don't have to outrun the bear. I just have to outrun you. Now, that story is about 93.5% true. but most of it is. But what is true, she did everything that she could to guarantee that our trip would be a good one. That's a phrase that we hear a lot. You know, she did everything she could, or he did everything that he could. But when Jesus speaks these words in Bethany, they take on a much deeper meaning, on a level high above a meaning that we typically give to that phrase. It happened in Bethany, and we read about this in Mark the 14th chapter. It's also recorded in Matthew chapter 26 and in John chapter 12. And we read in John that there was a special dinner given in the honor of Christ. And so Christ and his disciples and some others were there to pay their respect for Jesus. And verse 3 says, "And being in Bethany, in the house of Simon the leper, as he reclined, a woman came with an alabaster vial of pure, costly ointment of spikenard. And she broke the veil and poured it on his head." John tells us that this woman who did this was in fact Mary, the sister of Lazarus who lived in Bethany. And we see something very unusual taking place. We further read that, "And some were indignant to themselves, and they said, 'Why was this waste of the ointment made? For it might have been sold for more than 300 denarii and be given to the poor.' And they were incensed with her," or other version says, "they rebuked her harshly." The word indignant means to feel or to act with anger or annoyment for something that you perceive to be unfair. And it says that they were indignant to themselves. That means some of them had this feeling inside, thinking, "What in the world is this woman doing? This makes no sense." Later we read, and John reveals to us, that Judas spoke out about this. The ointment was very precious. John tells us that the ointment was worth a year's wage. Now, we can understand why men especially might think this is just not a wise thing to do. Men aren't prone to buy perfume. And even if it were one day's wage, which in Oklahoma, the average wage is about $51,000 a year, so it'd be about $200, most men would think, "That's ridiculous. You're spending $200 on perfume? Think of how many shotgun shells that would buy. I could buy enough golf balls to last me all year. And who knows how many fishing flies I could buy with that." So men already are not inclined to recognize what this lady is doing. But a year's wage, that means it's $51,000 in our day's value. I looked it up, and the most expensive perfume that I could find on the internet was 3.5 ounces for $3,500. That's $1,000 an ounce. Guys, just in case you're interested for Valentine's Day, that's it. Hers was 3 times worth that. If you divide it up, John says that she had about a pint of this precious ointment or perfume, $51,000. That's $3,100 and some odd per ounce. And yet she just poured it on his head. John says she also poured it on his feet. And the aroma filled the whole house. That's some smelly stuff. Yeah. But imagine her taking something worth $51,000 in our value and using it in this way. It might have been sold and given to the poor. Imagine how much good you could do feeding the poor people with $51,000. So there was some logic to what the men were thinking, but they were missing the point. Jesus said, "Let her alone." They were probably saying, "Woman, what are you doing? That's a crazy thing for you to do." But Jesus said, "Let her alone. Why do you trouble her? She's done a good work towards me. For you have the poor with you always, and whenever you desire, you may do them good. But you do not have me always." Now, those who heard him say this really didn't understand what he was saying. But they wouldn't have him with them always. In fact, he was in the last few days of his life. And Jesus goes on to explain. But isn't it weird that when someone is trying to do something good, that there are those who are there to criticize? And she was certainly feeling that. But then we get to the phrase that Jesus said, "Leave her alone because she has done what she could. She has come beforehand to anoint my body for the burying." We're told that the body of Jesus, after Joseph put it in the tomb, was later anointed with the normal burial ointments by some women who came. But Jesus says, "She's coming before my burial and anointing my body." I don't really think Mary understood the impact of her act of kindness that it was going to have on Jesus. She thought, "I'm just going to take this precious ointment and I'm going to put it on his head and his feet and he'll appreciate that. It's my way of expressing how much I adore him and appreciate him." But Jesus says, "You've done more than that. You have anointed my body for its burial." The actual interpretation of this is, "As she had, she did." That's the literal interpretation of the Greek, which means whatever she had, she took that and she did what she could to use what she had for a great purpose. She has done what she could. Is there anything else she could have done besides this? She could have come up and kissed Jesus, but everyone else did. That's the custom of the time, so that really wouldn't have meant much. She could have perhaps baked her favorite dish and brought it to Jesus, but there was food there already that everyone had prepared for this special occasion. That wouldn't have meant much. What more could she have possibly done to show her respect and love for Jesus? Now, that statement, "She has done what she could," is one that today we still talk about. Because Jesus said, "Truly I say unto you, wherever this gospel shall be proclaimed in all the world, this also that she has done will be spoken of for a memorial of her." It was a great thing. Now, that statement, "She's done what she could," begs a question, doesn't it? She's done what she could. Have you done what you could? When you start thinking about that, it takes us on some paths that may not be very comfortable. I don't know where your mind will go when you ask yourself, "Have you done what you could?" But let me share with you where my mind went as I read this one day and it just kind of jumped out at me and it wouldn't leave me alone. I thought of my mother. Had I done all that I could during her lifetime, especially the latter years of her life, to make her life as pleasant as possible? For about 20 years, she lived without my father, who preceded her. And although for many years my sister would come to her every day and visit her, my sister died. And so those last several years, she was sort of lonely. I tried to fill her day with a little bit of happiness. For a long time, on my way to work, which took about 15 minutes, I would call her on my cell phone. And, "Mom, how you doing today?" "She's doing fine, da-da-da-da." But after a while, you kind of run out of things to talk about. And so I didn't do that forever. Linda and I would go down to Haskell and visit with her occasionally, see how she was doing. But, of course, we were busy and we didn't get down there as often, perhaps, as we should. But as I think about that, it bugs me, because I'm haunted with the idea that I didn't do everything I could to make my mother's life what it could have been. But perhaps worse than that, then my silly thinking goes to my brother, who's just 18 months older than me. During the latter years of his life, he was alone. His wife had died earlier. He had some health problems, and he had suffering with some pain, and so he was given some pain medication, and that kind of got him off track. And then it turned to drinking, not to the point of being an alcoholic, but way too much drinking. And his heart was weak, and when he would be in the hospital for a few days, they would keep him there. And after 2 or 3 days, the alcohol that he wasn't getting now, he missed. And his body began to react, and he'd get fidgety, and it would bother him. I talked to him about every day for the last 2 or 3 years of his life. And on our way back from Arizona, he called me one day, and we were about halfway back, and he said, "Bob, I'm having pain in my chest." And I said, "Well, why are you telling me?" He said, "Well, you're my doctor." He always had a sense of humor. I said, "Well, call the doctor, man. Call an ambulance." So they did, and they took him to the hospital. When we got back, I called him and talked to him a little bit. He'd been in and out for several times, so I thought, "Well, that's just another time." But after being in another 2 or 3 days, his daughter called me about 1 o'clock in the morning, and she said, "Cliff's had a heart attack." They were able to bring him back, and he's stable for the moment. About an hour later, she called and said, "He's gone." I got to thinking about his situation. He was of the nature that he was sort of claustrophobic, and he did not want to be constrained. And when he would get fidgety because he was missing his alcohol, he would really get nervous and upset because they'd have to tie down his arms to keep him from pulling out the tubes and first one thing and another. I don't know that this happened, but I'm convinced myself that what really caused his heart to stop is that they probably had him constrained after that first attack so he wouldn't mess things up, and his claustrophobia and all of that just put so much stress on him that I killed him. What could I have done? After that first call, I'm thinking, I should have gone to the hospital, and I should have been there to help him so that he wouldn't have to be constrained. I could just watch him and have, I don't know that that would have helped, but you see where your mind goes when you start asking this question, have I done all I could? There's a lot of guilt, but you know, guilt is not to be used in a way that it discourages us. Satan will beat us over the head with guilt to the point that we become discouraged and don't want to do anything. God gives us guilt for one purpose, and that is so that we will be motivated to do better. So let's turn our thought to that direction. You know, Paul said, "I leave those things behind and I press forward." Paul had done a lot of things that he shouldn't have done. Not only did he not do in the early years of his life what he could have done to promote Christ, he did what he could have done to stop Christ. But he says, I'm forgetting about that. I'm pressing on because there's better things ahead if I choose to do them. So have you done what you could to bear another's burdens? Galatians 6:2 tells us to bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. I have seen a lot of you doing what you could to bear other people's burdens. Yeah. I've seen people repair houses of someone who needed repair, build walkways for those who needed a wheelchair access to their home, mow the yards. I've seen and heard of raking of the leaves, of taking food to individuals when they were ill or there was a death in their family. A lot of things this church family does to bear one another's burdens. But have we done all that we can? Are there some of you like me, perhaps, that hear about something that someone needs, but we really don't care enough to do something about it? One of the needs that many of us have, one of the burdens that a lot of us have, is not physical, but it's emotional. And there are times when we need to visit, to call, write a card, whatever, to help someone when they're emotionally distraught and disturbed. That perhaps is the heaviest kind of burden. Have you done what you could to pray for others? Again, this is a praying congregation. This is the most praying congregation that I've ever attended. We've got a prayer group. We've got a prayer chain. So when there's special needs of anyone, word goes out and everybody starts praying for that particular need. And that's such a great thing. But there are others. Inside your bulletin, on the inside page, I hope you are aware that there's a whole list of people for whom you can pray. Every week there's 25, 30, 35 names there that could use your prayer. I can tell you right now, my praying is not what it ought to be. Last Thursday, Linda and I got a text. It was a text from our daughter who lives in Searcy. She says, and she's responding to the fact that for the last two or three months she's been limping around because something's really wrong with her hip and she's suffering with pain. Says, so I just had an MRI on my hip. The technician said it looked horrible. She showed me the fluid all the way around the head of my femur and going down the inside of my leg. We'll see what the doctor says. Will y'all pray for some good news from the doctor? You can't ignore a request like that. Sure, we told her, we'll pray for it. A few minutes later, this was early in the morning as we were getting ready to go to work. A few minutes later, I asked Linda, I said, what are we going to have for lunch? Because that's always a big issue in the middle of the day. And she says, I'm going to fast for 2 days. I said, okay. And I'll tell you what I thought. Wow, this woman takes her praying seriously. I thought that is a good thing to do. You go ahead and do it. I need my food. One of us is doing all they can to make their prayers valid. And one of us isn't. Now you figure out which one it is. Yeah. Prayers can do a lot. They can go a long way. Are you doing everything you can to reach the lost? I imagine every one of you has someone in mind that you care about, you've known. It's a friend, it's a neighbor, maybe someone you work with, a relative, who really hasn't taken their spiritual life seriously. And who needs to come to Christ and to become a servant of His. Have you done what you can? To see that he has that opportunity. There was such a person in my life. About a 56-year-old, mid-50-year-old man. Young man. I've known him since he was a kid. His parents didn't take him to church. He knew of God, but he certainly didn't know God. Spiritual matters just weren't that important. And I thought, this guy has such a kind heart. And that does describe him. Very kind, wonderful personality. Whenever he's in your midst, he just makes you feel good. And I thought, I've got to find a way to get him to consider the spiritual side of life. And so a couple, 3 months ago, when we had our Friends and Family Day, Linda said, I know 2 or 3 people I'm going to call and invite. And I thought, this is a great opportunity for me to call this person. Well, let's call him Jeremy. I'll call Jeremy and see if he will come. This would be a great opportunity. And so a few days before, Linda called hers, and by the time that day got around that Sunday morning, I hadn't called Jeremy. Now, Jeremy's a little difficult to get a hold of. You can call him, he won't return your call. You got to leave a message and he'll call you back. But still, I didn't go through all of that to try to get him here. So that morning on Sunday when we came together, it was Friends and Family Day. I knew we were going to have a full auditorium. Everyone's going to bring their friends. And I was kind of excited about meeting people that were friends of yours, sitting in the classroom right before class started, waiting for Zach to start teaching. And my phone rang. No one calls me on Sunday morning at that time of the day, not even the spam people. So I reached in my pocket, I pulled out my phone, I walked out of the classroom so it wouldn't be a disturbance, and I got down the hallway where it was quiet, and I said hello, and it was Jeremy's mother. And I could tell when she said, Bob, the cracking in her voice, it wasn't good news. She said, Bob, Jeremy is dead. He's gone. He's passed. Guess what I was thinking? Wow. Why didn't I earlier do what I could do to get him here? The clock is ticking. You don't have all the time in the world to think about those that are lost and to do what you can do. What if Mary had thought, you know, there's a lot of people here. It's kind of busy. I think I'll just wait till next week to try to do this for Jesus. She wouldn't have been able to do it because Jesus wasn't there the following week. It would have been too late. So think about that. Husbands, are you doing everything that you can to be the best husband that you can? In Ephesians chapter 5, Paul gives some very stiff requirements for us as husbands. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. That is a tall order. You love your wife like Christ loved the church. How much is that? That's more than we can imagine. God has given us wives. He knew what he was doing. Our wives are probably the most precious gift that we have. And as husbands, we need to do all that we can to make our wives aware of how much we care for them. Wives, same thing. In the same book, Paul says to the wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. That's another tall order. As Jesus requires your submission, wives, so does God require that submission to your husbands. Now, I know none of us are perfect husbands, and it's sometimes hard for wives to overlook our shortcomings. But wives, once in a while when your husband does something right, thank him for it. Tell him you appreciate it, you know. Make him feel as good as you possibly can. It will pay big dividends. Parents, are you doing what you can to raise your children in the Lord? I can guarantee you, if you aren't, there will come a day when you'll regret it. The one thing that we like to hear is someone to tell us, good job. I mean, I don't care what it is, if it's a little thing or a big thing, when someone says, good job, it just makes us feel good. But not nearly as good as to hear Jesus say to us on the day of judgment, well done, thou good and faithful servant. These words were actually spoken when Jesus was giving a parable to those that were there listening to him. When he gives the parable of the man to whom God gave 5 talents, the one who gave 2 talents, and the 1 talent, and to those men who took their 5 talents and doubled it, and the 2 talented man who came back with 2 more, Jesus said, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Good job. When we stand before Christ on the day of judgment, is that what we're going to hear? In other words, you have done all that you can do. Good job. Well done. And in a sense, that's actually the same thing he was telling Mary. You've done all that you can. We're going to close with one other thought. Chase this around in your mind for a minute. Has Christ done what he could do for you? What more could he have done than what he has already done to see that we don't spend an eternity in hell? Could he have spent 6 more hours on the cross? What more would Jesus have to do to completely make you surrender your life to him? Could have done anything else? He's done all that he can do. What are we doing? Are we doing all we can do to say thank you, Jesus? Thank you for doing the impossible, for taking me as a sinner and making me a child of God. We're going to sing a song of invitation in just a moment, and when we do, if there's any way that we can help you in doing what you can, it doesn't have to be big things. Just do what you have been given. Use what God's given you and do something with it. If we can help you to do that anyway, come and let us know as we sing.
Have thine affections been nailed to the cross? Is thy heart right with God? Does it count all things for Jesus but lost? Is thy heart right with God? Is thy heart right with God? Washed in the crimson blood, cleansed and made holy, humble and lowly, right in the sight of God. Are all thy powers under Jesus' control? Is thy heart right?